Jim McGuinness wrote in his book about, and I don't know whether he's changed on this, but as Colin McFadden reached to punch that ball to the back of the net, he didn't want it to happen because they hadn't played to their principles.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. So it really couldn't be set up any better for Sunday evening in Basel for the final of the Women's European Championships, with the holders England taking on the world champion Spain in a repeat of the World Cup final of 2 years ago. Football writer Jessie Parker-Humphreys is with us. How are you keeping, Jessie?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. So is this a meeting of the two best teams in the competition?
I don't know if England count as one of the two best teams in the competition. I think Spain certainly do. I think they very much deserve to be there. England's journey to the final has obviously been a little bit dramatic, and I don't know if they've shown the best of themselves at this competition, but I don't think it's unfair to say that they are one of the best teams, on paper at least, in the world.
Yeah. What are England in this European competition, aside from just being brilliantly entertaining?
It's the million-dollar question, honestly. You watch this team sometimes and you think they look fantastic, they can beat anyone. You know, we saw in the group stage they blew away the Netherlands, they smashed Wales, and then they'll go and play these games against other teams and they look like they've never met each other before. But I guess the thing that's been important for England and the thing they've managed to do is they've had this never-say-die attitude. They've carried on believing even when, you know, almost everyone in the ground will have certainly thought they were going out. And I guess sometimes you need that little bit of luck, that little bit of belief to make international tournament finals.
There would have been a time where we said that's a very un-English thing, but considering the level of success that we're all having to get used to with English football at the moment and the consistency of getting to major finals at all levels of the game, it shouldn't be a surprise. And is it that muscle memory of success and of being able to win big games that has seen them through this tournament, particularly after such a rocky start and then many rocky moments over the last couple of games?
I think so, definitely. I mean, look, when they made the semi-final, it was the sixth consecutive semi-final that this England team had made. That's like a level of experience that, you know, you have to go through to be able to draw on. And when we look at sort of some of the standout players who we've seen in those individual games, obviously Lucy Bronze is one of the heroes against Sweden. That's someone who was playing her first European Championship in 2013. So I think that's been so, so important. You've got Chloe Kelly as well, someone who was the difference maker in the Euro 2022 final. So all of that stuff, I think, has really added up. But then you see how that filters down to other players. So when you're looking at 19-year-old Michelle Adjaman coming off the bench and making this incredible impact, I think, you know, what she has is that belief as a whole of the team that everyone in this squad can make a difference. Everyone will say it's only over when it's over and they'll keep fighting to the final whistle.
How is Serena Wiegmann dealing with the performance level throughout this tournament? Like, her level of success is sort of unprecedented. She maintains her record of reaching the final of every women's Euro and every women's World Cup that she's been a head coach of, which is simply insane. But it doesn't feel as though her fingerprints are over the performance that they would have been in other campaigns. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that is fair. I mean, Wiegmann as a persona is someone who comes across as generally quite unfazed, but I think even she's had sort of a little bit of like nervous energy around her in terms of how bonkers these games have been. She's continued to still be, I think, quite, you know, focused on feeling like the team is playing well in these individual patches and games. For example, she was asked about not bringing subs on sooner against Italy, and she said, look, I felt like the team was playing well and they were creating chances. I don't know if I agree with her on that, but that's clearly what she felt. And in the end, the subs did come on and they did do the job. So I guess it becomes this thing of like, when you've got a manager who's made so many of these finals, sort of who are you to argue with their methods? But I do think regardless of what happens on Sunday, England will have some soul-searching to do about the way they've performed at this tournament, which feels like a ridiculous thing to say, but they're the standards that England have set themselves in some ways. And, you know, I think it would be naive to pretend that this team has been this great, you know, swashbuckling side that have got this far. But again, they get to contest the final on Sunday, and, you know, who knows? They could win a second consecutive European Championship.
And is there any suggestion within that, then, that the team aren't fully buying into Wiegmann's philosophy, management style anymore?
No, I kind of think the opposite, honestly. I think if you see the way these players are coming on and like giving themselves to the team, it feels like there's a lot of unity in the squad. And obviously before the tournament, there was a lot of conversation about the players who weren't there, no Mary Earps, no Millie Bright, and how much that would affect the side. But it actually feels like those players stepping away has really allowed the whole group to come together. I think when you're thinking about maybe why England have looked so bad, there are a couple of different things going on. Lots of English players who've started a lot were injured coming into this tournament. And I think it means that as in terms of preparation, lots of different players played in the lead up to the tournament who aren't necessarily the ones who are starting now. Clearly, Wiegmann's wanted to tweak some stuff with the defence, and then you sort of lose those relationships. And I think just some players just look pretty exhausted. And again, that relates to the injuries. Lauren James, Lauren Hemp, these are players who've missed huge amounts of football. And I think the tournament's taken its toll on them. So it'll be interesting to see what they do look like going forward. I mean, even before the tournament, the FA were very bullish that even if they went out in the group stages, Wiegmann will be manager come 2027. So we will get another cycle of her with this team, and it'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
And those players who are starting games, who are maybe recovering from injury, maybe there's a contradiction in this. Is there a loyalty to those players that they're being picked still in the starting 11? And I'm going to contradict it by saying, obviously, the player, she's making so many changes and making so many good decisions in match, and the substitutes are having such an impact. Clearly, what they're doing is working at the moment. Is there almost an acceptance of, well, maybe 45 minutes, an hour is the most you're going to get out of Lauren James, but you're better off having that as the first hour?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, Wiegmann is someone who's, and I think this is why she's been so good at international football. Her philosophy tends to be that, you know, she is going to play the players that she wants to start, and she is going to play them again and again and again, because that gives you the relationships when you don't have that much time on the training ground to be more effective. What's kind of been bizarre this tournament is she's probably stepped away from that a little bit more than she did in 2022 and in 2023 at the World Cup. And she has sort of changed things up a little bit. For example, LJ played as the 10 in that first game against France, and she moved her out to the right wing for the subsequent games. We've seen a couple of different defensive lineups come in. But I think generally her feeling is, let's start with how we want to start, what we think our best 11 is. And we know we've got these players who we can come off the bench, and we trust those players as well. You know, in England camp, they call them finishers. It kind of feels like one of those like mumbo jumbo psychology things, but it obviously works for them as a group that they see that role as being as important as if you're a starting player.
Yeah. And look, there's an element of scoreboard journalism to all of that then, because the substitutes look like genius when you score in the 95th minute. If you don't, it's why did you leave it so late to make those? And that debate has been sort of raging since Tuesday night. And there seems to be a real split amongst the analysts as to what's the right thing to do, particularly for this final against the Spain team, who you would expect will dominate possession. And you could spend quite a bit of time chasing shadows. And do you need suddenly that bit of freshness coming into the team to make more than one change, as happened for the semi-final, to give Angie Mann or Chloe Kelly a start in this game, a start in this team? But that doesn't seem to fit in with the sort of pragmatism of what Wiegmann does. Do you think she will react because of the opposition, because of the amount of games?
I don't think so, no. I think we'll see the same starting 11 that we saw against Italy, to be totally honest. I mean, you know, I think she likes what those players can bring off the bench, but the fact they're coming off the bench maybe reveals that she doesn't trust them to execute all elements of her game plan. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, when you look at like what Adjaman can bring, like she's been fantastic, but it's sort of a little bit about chaos and disruption. And it's easier to do that when you're like in the last 10 minutes of a game and the opposition's kind of panicking if you're putting a lot of pressure on them. Similarly, Chloe Kelly, I think if you've got the opportunity to be running at tired legs, that's an advantage for the way she wants to play. So I think that's why Wiegmann likes to keep things the way she does. The thing that'll be really interesting about Spain, as you said, you know, they're a team who really like to keep the ball. England are the team who've had the next highest possession after Spain, and I think that reflects the way teams have looked to play against them. Sweden obviously went ahead very early, and then they were happy to sit back. Italy were always going to sit back right from the start and try and bait England to come onto them. It's not going to be like that in this Spain game. Spain will want the ball, and England will have the opportunity to maybe play a bit more on the counter-attack, a bit more in transition. And to be honest, over the past 12 months, that's probably where they've looked the most dangerous. They lost 2-1 to Spain just before the Euros, but like that's how they scored the goal. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how that shift changes things for England, because they haven't looked very good when they're expected to have the ball. And I kind of wonder if when they don't have the ball, maybe they will end up looking better.
Without going down the road of stereotypes too much. We obviously had our own Dutch manager in this country managing the Republic of Ireland, and Vera Pauw was often bemused about the conversations around style of play and team selection and all of that. When these debates are raging around the starting 11, Serena Wiegmann's response to that, is she just sort of throwing her eyes to heaven going, we're winning games, we're in a final, what more do you want from me?
I don't think she doesn't react like that. I think she sometimes comes across just as a bit bemused at other people's opinions of it. She comes across so sure in what she's doing. So, you know, I think it was after the France game, someone was asking, you know, was it right to start Lauren James? Obviously, she's been coming back from this injury. Wouldn't it be better to have her off the bench? And she just sort of went, no. But like, that's her personality. And that's the kind of Dutch element, right? It's so straightforward. It's so to the point. But at the same time, I think when we're talking about this England side as a group, that gives you confidence and belief. If your manager is like, this is what we want to do, and I think this is the right thing, I think that helps players buy in. I mean, whether the performances justify it, I don't know, but the results certainly do.
Yeah, and the quality of their attacking play is at 11 different scorers during this competition, which almost feels unprecedented to have that many attacking options. Makes it very difficult for an opposition coach to predict what you're going to do over various stages of the game, which maybe is, as has been proven over the semi-final and quarter-final, that is the bit that they have that nobody else has.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, again, when you're looking at someone like Adjumang and the impact she's going to have, no one would have said to you, I think, even in March, that Adjumang would make the squad. Like, genuinely. It feels like so sort of out of the blue, the way she's ascended to not only being in the squad and going along as sort of as a player who you think is going to be important in the future, maybe she can pick up some experience, but to being sort of the decisive factor in the quarterfinal and the semifinal. But that makes it harder for opposition to prepare for. She's not even someone who, there's a huge amount of footage you can watch of her. She only played about 500 minutes for Brighton last season in the WSL. But
so can you talk to us then about what happened since March? What did Wiegmann see in Adjumang that firstly earned her place in the squad, but then this crucial sort of career-changing role over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, look, Adjumang is someone who's been so highly rated at youth level. She scored goals for fun with England at youth level. She went on loan to Brighton this season. As I say, she played a decent amount of minutes, but like not a crazy amount of minutes. She had some good performances. She had, you know, she was like a 19-year-old. She looked good at points. She didn't look good at points. She comes into the England side and she comes off the bench in a game against Belgium. She scores sort of within 30 seconds of coming off the bench. And you're like, wow, you know, this girl looks like she can have an impact. But then in the last set of games before the Euros, Adjumang didn't feature at all. Like, she was in the squad, but she didn't come off the bench. You're like, okay, this, you know, this player maybe isn't going to be used that much. But I think what's crucial is before in Euro 2022 and World Cup 2023, Millie Bright was the, like, break glass and emergency player, and Wiegmann would push her up top and play her as the foil with the other striker, which was, you know, Russo or whoever was on the pitch at the time. And I think Wiegmann sees Adjumang as playing that role. You know, there is no Millie Bright in this squad, but Adjumang has kind of the same sort of physical characteristics. She's going to get a defender. She's going to put her body around. I think what's been exciting is how good the rest of her technical play has been as well. Mm. But I think that's sort of the you know, stereotype of a striker who could play off the actual number nine that Wiegmann was looking for, that Adjumang's come in and fulfilled.
Am I right to presume she goes back to Arsenal next season and is a big part of their squad?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see, right? It's tough with young players when you're trying to balance. You want them involved in the squad, especially if you think they can make an impact, which obviously Adjumang can. But sometimes you're like, does this player need to go and play week in, week out? So it'll be really interesting to see how Arsenal deal with it. They've obviously just spent £1 million on Olivia Smith. So, you know, that there are other forwards who are going to be there jostling for minutes on top of their original roster. So it'll be really interesting to see how she looks next season if she does stay at Arsenal rather than going on another loan.
So it's Spain once again in a major final, just like in the World Cup final. And it felt that day like there was a big gulf in class between the two groups. And obviously everything that happened afterwards for Spain sort of overshadowed the brilliant achievement of that victory. In terms of the purely footballing side of it, has the gap been closed over those 2 years?
I don't know. I think Spain become a hard team to judge because the way they play and the way they like to play can often make them look like they really dominate games without necessarily really putting the opposition under huge amounts of pressure, even though they obviously are. If you have the ball for a lot of the game, you are. But take the game against Germany last night. For large portions of this game, obviously Aitana Bonmatí scores the winner in extra time. But like, Germany didn't look that phased. They were kind of happy to have Spain at arm's length. But
nearly nicked it at the end.
Yeah, exactly. But you watch it and you're like, Spain are dominating this, right? So, you know, England beat Spain at Wembley in February. Spain then beat England in Barcelona just before the Euro. So these two teams have like traded blows since the World Cup. I agree Spain were far better in the World Cup final, but I think England will take heart from the way they played against them in February, where it was that kind of thing where they just really played this very intense out-of-possession game. They really like suffocated Spain and didn't let them get the ball into the areas they wanted. Can England do that after they've played 120 minutes twice in the knockout stages on top of the previous three games? That, I think, for me is the question mark and why, you know, I would make Spain still fairly heavy favourites for this game, because I do think they are the better side. But I definitely think, you know, England will feel like, despite losing that World Cup final, that they've shown that they can beat Spain and they can get at them.
The quality of that finish last night from Bonmati and even the comments afterwards that, and listen, maybe it's easy in hindsight, they studied the goalkeeper and she takes that step out from the post when you're in that position, but still to be able to execute it at a moment like that is just world class.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sat in the press box and the person next to me went, you know, do we think she meant it? And I was like, of course she meant it. Of course she meant it. Yeah, she's such a quality player, obviously. And, you know, I think there were kind of question marks over whether, you know, Berger should have done better. But I can understand why, from where Berger is, you do take the step towards that, because most players are going to try and play the cross or cut it back. And it's a special player who can bend it in from there. But that's what Aitana is, and that's what Spain have. They just have so many players who can hurt you that even when you talk about maybe them tactically not being variable or it being able to, you know, hold them at bay for a bit, they have so many players, whether it's Aitana, Alexia Putellas, Claudia Pina, who can just create that something out of nothing, and that's it.
And like the reemergence of Alexia Putellas and then the emergence as well of Esther Gonzalez, their leading scorer, add something massively in an attacking sense from that World Cup final.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Alexia went to that World Cup, but was still recovering from her ACL. So, you know, didn't get a chance to play really. Jenny Hermoso obviously led the line there. So I do think, you know, it really helps Spain having these different options. And the thing that we've seen Monse Tomé do is she'll sort of start with maybe these more technical players who want to play the kind of traditional tiki-taka Spain that we all know. But in Salma Paruelo, who obviously had a fantastic World Cup, and Athenia Del Castillo, they've also got players who will run at you and play in that more direct style. So we've kind of seen those players coming on after 60, 70 minutes to mix it up if they need to. And I think it's that really adds the edge to Spain, that, you know, they don't have to necessarily just play in one way. They do have players who are going to try and stretch teams rather than just looking for those like nice passes in the middle of the pitch.
You might just talk to us a little bit about Aitana Bonmati then and what she went through pre-tournament and her illness and how remarkable it is that she's at this level of performance just a few weeks later.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, obviously, you know, she was diagnosed with this meningitis and she had to spend time in a hospital. So I think, like, obviously, it was a little bit of a question mark, maybe what exact role she was going to play. She didn't start in those first two group games. But yeah, I think you've seen her, like, grow into this tournament. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, always with international tournaments, you're thinking there's that Ballon d'Or on the horizon. You know, she's won the last two. Alexia won the two before that. I mean, it's a ridiculous set of talent to have, but you feel like for either of those players, like a strong Euros final, like there aren't many clear candidates for it. It could swing in an important way for an individual award, which I'm sure means less than what winning the Euros would mean to them, but obviously still means something.
You weren't doing the Rio Ferdinand in the press box last night, were you? Just roaring Ballon d'Or when the goal went in?
Absolutely not, sadly.
The Rubiales situation and that being an inspiration to this Spain team to go and achieve once again. Is this a story of redemption that they're talking about, of wanting to be able to savour this in a different way and be able to celebrate it in a right and proper way that they maybe weren't 2 years ago after the World Cup? Is that been spoken about around this team?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's obviously an understandable feeling that, you know, the obviously what happened after the World Cup with Rubiales did take away from what Spain had managed to achieve. And, you know, it's impossible to overstate like how big a deal that was for Spain, because I think it's very easy now to see Spain as this real all-conquering team. They are like widely recognized as the best team in the world, I believe, fairly. You know, we've seen for years Barcelona obviously look incredibly good in sort of European league football. But Spain hadn't won like a knockout game at a tournament basically before that World Cup. So, you know, everything they're doing now at the Euros is unprecedented for them. And I think that is something that really matters. They'd never beaten Germany before.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that when I heard it. Like, as you say, I just sort of assumed Spain had this long-held dominance considering what Barcelona have been doing in recent years.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that's why also this is so special for this team, because it is still very new for all of these players. And, you know, yeah, Alexia Putellas scored the winner against England in the group stage in 2013 of the Euros. And to think about where her and the Spain team is now, 12 years on, it's been an incredible journey for like this whole group of players. And yeah, I mean, I think if they were to win on Sunday, it would be very meaningful for them, given everything they went through to get to the point they are now.
A meeting of England and Spain, a repeat of the Champions League final as well. And how similar could this game be to that one? I'm thinking even in terms of the possession, like it felt that day there was almost that passive possession, which is the sort of fancy new term for passing it around a lot, but really going nowhere. And it felt Barcelona turned into that day. There was that bit of a lack of a cutting edge. And maybe at times with, you know, 2/3 of the possession, that can end up happening Spain as well. Are there similarities with what Arsenal managed to do that day and what England will try and do on Sunday?
Yeah, I think so. I do think that you know, ability to maybe make sure the possession is kind of meaningless is something that Spain have struggled with at different points in this tournament. Even I think even against Switzerland, who they did beat comfortably in the end, but they got frustrated at points in time as well in that game. How much the Champions League final thing plays into it, it's really hard to say. I mean, there's plenty of sort of animosity is too strong a word probably, but rivalry between these two teams. There's a lot of Arsenal players in this England side. There's a lot of Chelsea players who probably have more animosity with Barcelona, to be totally honest, in this side. But I think generally often when you go into an international camp, you sort of reset your mind a little bit. So, you know, maybe it'll be in the back of some players' heads to know that they've played against some of these players and beaten them in a really important match. But I think there's already enough sort of history between England and Spain. This is the third consecutive tournament they'll have played in. We're talking about the World Cup final, but obviously England knocked them out at the quarterfinal stage in 2022. So, you know, I think generally looking at European international football generally, this feels like a rivalry that could run and run.
You've been over there covering the tournament and we're obviously watching on, very jealous in this country, thinking we should have been there. In terms of the quality in comparison to recent big tournaments, World Cups, European Championships, where does it stand?
I think every tournament in the women's game, you just feel like teams are taking a step forward. I think definitely the gap between, you know, the best teams and the worst teams gets smaller every time, as we see sort of the technical and tactical abilities of those smaller teams take step forward. Like you've got sides like Poland going to their first tournament and getting their first win in the group stage over Denmark. And so I think, you know, we'll continue to see these tournaments move on and get bigger and get stronger. I think something that's also been really exciting is I feel like at the top, the gap does feel small. Like I think England and Spain, maybe on a talent level at least, are potentially a step ahead. But, you know, again, we saw both semifinals obviously go to extra time, which says a lot, I think, about how these teams are competing. Seeing a side like Italy make a semifinal as well, really exciting to see. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how things develop as sort of we look ahead to 2027. I think the World Cup obviously still feels like so exciting when you get maybe the slightly different styles of football, when you've got teams from Asia, South America, obviously the USA as well. But yeah, I think it's been a really exciting tournament for women's football in Europe.
How do you see Sunday evening developing then?
I find it really hard to look past Spain. Honestly, I just think you would be ridiculous to look at England's performances over the past 2 weeks and think that this is a team that's like really got a good chance against Spain. But at the same time, England have plenty of experience of being at this stage of a competition, and you know, maybe that's something they can use in their favor. The other weird thing England have had recently, again over the past 18 months, is they are unpredictable. You know, like when we're talking about them being bad at this tournament, we're still talking about a team that scored 11 goals in the group stage, for example. And so they played two bad games, and part of me is like, well, they probably drew a good one, so maybe they will win. But yeah, I think Spain still probably, I'd say, 70-30 favourites in my mind.
Just before we let you go, there's a bit of an Irish invasion of the northeast of England taking place at the moment, because Aoife Mannion has signed for Newcastle. Jamie Finn today has signed for Sunderland. Grace Maloney signed for Sunderland a few weeks ago as well. It does look as though those teams in the northeast are shown a lot of ambition at the moment, particularly with the WSL expansion that's coming in. Who knows, we might see a few more Irish up there before the transfer window closes.
Yeah, it's super exciting as well, because obviously the Northeast has been a massive place for player development. I mean, when you're talking about players like Lucy Bronze, for example, like, she obviously is from around there. And, you know, Sunderland were historically one of the biggest teams in terms of developing young English talent. So clearly, obviously, Newcastle's investment over the past couple of years has been significant, and they look like they're going to take this season very, very seriously. And you're right, obviously, with the WSL expansion, there's a huge incentive for Championship teams to really go for it this year and really push for it. Two automatic spots and the opportunity to play a playoff if you finish third. So yeah, it's exciting, and I think also like an amazing opportunity for women's footballers generally to continue to play at a high level, you know, rather than just sort of having 12 clubs and you're trying to get a WSL contract. The opportunity to say, you know, look, there are 20, 25 clubs who it's worth signing for and worth playing for. And when we're talking about, say, international tournaments and the level rising, that's exactly the kind of thing that's feeding into that, right?
Mm. Yeah, it's only going one way, it seems, in English football at the moment. We hope we can hang on with the success that is coming your way. Listen, enjoy Sunday. Jesse Parker-Humphreys, thank you as ever.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.